Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Chattahoochee Folk Hour. It's Monday night, and it's time for another hour of super good bluegrass and folk music. As always, I'm your host on the Chattahoochee Folk Hour, and I'm glad you're here with us this evening. Tonight, we're going to be airing my interview with Stella Parton, and I think it's going to be a really enjoyable night, so I hope you've got your sweet tea ready. Stella Parton is an accomplished singer-songwriter, actress, producer, and author. She has just finished her book and published it, Tell Her Sister Tell It. That's the title of her book. And she has a companion CD to go along with it, which is a terrific idea. I had the privilege of meeting her last Thursday when she was here on campus at Brenau University, and then I conducted a telephone interview with her on Friday. You may be more familiar with her older sister, Dolly, but Stella has her own amazing story, and I'm glad you will have the opportunity of getting to know her here on the Chattahoochee Folk Hour. Stella has a great book that she's going to be talking about, and she's going to be just talking about life in general. So I think we've got a lot in store. So I hope you get your glass of sweet tea and settle in, and let's get things started with a title track from her CD called Tell It, Sister, Tell It.
Sister, tell it everywhere you go. Tell it, sister, tell it. Let everybody know. She could rock the night away until the break of day. Her voice ringing through the air, dancing and singing. She did not have a care. They would come from all around to hear that awesome sound, and they'd all say, tell it, sister, tell it. Let the whole world
now we'll go to part one of my interview with Stella that took place last Friday. And let's go ahead and get into the interview. This is Ralph Taylor, and I am so excited this evening to have Stella Parton on the line with us for an interview. Stella, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing, Ralph? It was good to meet you this week.
Well, it's been so exciting having you in Gainesville, Georgia, and on campus. We had the good fortune of meeting at your question and answer presentation with the students, and you were so engaging, and the students and all of us got so much out of it. So it just made me so excited to be able to spend this time with you this evening.
Well, thank you, Ralph. I'm excited to visit with you, and gosh, I just love the campus there. Everyone that gets to enjoy classes there are really blessed to have such a great campus to enjoy.
Stella, I wanted to begin, when I started about introducing you to everyone, I wanted to begin by reading something from your book, your foreword, and we're going to be talking about Stella's new book, Tell It, Sister, Tell It. And Stella, on the Chattahoochee Folk Hour, I want you to tell it, sister. Okay?
Okay, I will. Well, I don't know any better.
Well, this is a beautiful thing to say about you, and I'm going to read this from the foreword of your book, written by Jerry Wood. I admire her for so many reasons. She shattered glass ceilings in Nashville with the same self-assured wisdom and confidence that had crumbled the confining coal ceilings of her Appalachian mountains. She flashes the courage to follow her impressive talents into the realms of songwriting, singing, and acting, despite looming in the shadow of a sister superstar, also named Parton, who has conquered the same three professions. Stella knows the gain and pain of a last name. Trust me, there's more of the latter than the former, but she has shattered the surname ceiling, an angel flying too close to the ground, her own woman, following her own muse, hearing her own unique drummer, a crown princess who delights in leading the entourage off the beaten path into places dark, delightful, and demanding. Stella successfully stepped out of the shadow that would have snuffed out Lester lights and strode boldly into the deceptive glamour and unforgiving glare of stage lights. She swapped shadows for sunlight, and the world is a brighter and better place because of it. Stella has become my earth angel. Stella, what a wonderful thing to say.
Well, he is a very sweet, dear friend, and a gifted writer, actually. So originally, he kind of started out helping me with the book, and then he had to move away. He was a wonderful journalist and was very successful over the years of my career in country music. He, at one time, headed up the Nashville Bureau of Billboard magazine, and then during the time that he started to transcribe the first batch of my tapes for this book, and he was with Country Weekly magazine.
I see.
And then I said, Jerry, I said, I'm just going to start doing this myself. I don't want anybody else's personality in my story. And he was such a good writer, I thought, you know, I better not do that. But then I had him write the foreword because he and I had worked together on so many other projects and are friends.
Well, Stella, tell us about Tell It, Sister, Tell It. I enjoyed reading it last night, and I've got all kinds of things I want to ask you about, but why don't you just tell the listeners what your book is all about?
Well, Ralph, I consider the book to be an inspirational memoir, and I thought after 40-some years in the entertainment industry that I had something to say and that my journey justified me sharing maybe some of my experiences and some of my wisdom with the hope of maybe giving hope to other young people and other young women that might feel like they're alone in the landscape of life's journey, whether it's to be a single mother trying to raise children, to carve out a career for yourself in, you know, the arts, or whether it's just to overcome what a lot of women have had to face and experience, and that is domestic violence. And I wanted to say, if I can overcome some of the things I've overcome, then you can too. So it's just a message of hope, I hope.
Oh, well, it is, and that comes through so beautifully in your description of your life song. You know, on the Chattahoochee Folk Hour, our tagline is to remember every life is a song. Every life is a song worth singing. And Stella, as I read your book, you don't have a life song. You have an entire musical with your life.
Well, I like to think so, you know. But like you say, you know, I believe that music is the voice of God. And being able to sing and lift my voice in song and hopefully bring a blessing and hope to other people, that it's made my journey a little less painful than it might have been otherwise.
Yeah. Stella, one thing that you have done with your book that I think is an ingenious idea is that you have a companion CD that goes with your book. And tell us about that.
Well, being a songwriter, Ralph, when I was putting the book together and it was kind of falling together as it was, I realized that I had song lyrics in there. And I had that thought after I had finished the book, and I thought, you know, I've got several song lyrics in there because I would say, you know, through the story, and this inspired this particular song, or this is why I wrote this particular song after I would tell a story in the book. And as I started looking, I realized I had exactly 10 songs in the story, within the story of the book. And then I started looking and listening to the songs, and I thought, well, these are actually laid out exactly the way I want the CD to lay out. So the CD kind of created itself.
Oh, that's terrific. How long did it take you to write the book, Stella?
I think it took about 2 years. Just I didn't write on it every day. Of course, I would write on it. And then the girl that works with me so closely, she would type it up and hand it back to me, and then I would kind of correct things or add to things. And as I said yesterday in the class, I didn't really have an outline. I just started to, you know, write random thoughts, and then it took the shape that it does have and that it turned out to have. But I was able to put it in more of a chronological order after it was finished.
Mm. Well, Stella, let me begin by asking you about your roots. It's very apparent from your book that you've drawn great strength from your roots growing up in Appalachia. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience growing up in eastern Tennessee?
Ralph, I think growing up so close to the land has really given me more of a grounded, pun intended, sense of my own purpose and my own being as a human being. I really think that's lacking a lot in today's society. You know, if we were going to have fun, we had to figure out ways to have fun on our own. We didn't have toys. We didn't have gadgets. We certainly didn't have technology to help us. So it was mostly about nature. And to grow up in such a lush, beautiful place as the Appalachian Mountains, I mean, how can you not feel blessed?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell us some of your, maybe one or two of your favorite memories growing up in Appalachia.
I think usually for me, it was the first day of spring. Mama would let us take our shoes off and run barefoot in the yard. And just to feel the dirt under your feet, your fresh, tender little feet for the first time in the summer, because we went barefoot all summer. But she would always make us wait until, I think it was like May Day, and she'd say, first day of May, you can take shoes off and we can run barefoot. And we love that. And to, you know, feel the grass between your toes and just to enjoy the May Day, you know, celebration was just, to me, some of the most fun things. And I think revival time, going to church during revivals in the summertime, was just, to me, more exciting than going to a big rock concert or even a, you know, theatrical production.
Yeah.
Wow. I just absolutely love it and still love it to this day.
You have some great descriptions in your book about some of the smells and the touches and feels of growing up in your home. I think you talked about the straw in your bed and how it sounded like rain to you. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, we did not have the money to buy big plush, pillow top mattresses and stuff. And people back then didn't even think about it. They were lucky if they had a cotton mattress to throw on the bed. But my mother was ingenious in the way that she always knew how to make the best out of any situation. And I still think it's about the coolest thing in the world to be able to sleep on a straw mattress.
I bet. You have a great memory about your mother when you wrote that your mother was happiest when she was creative. I kind of think that Stella has the same kind of philosophy. What do you think?
I think so. You know, when I was writing her the description of my mother in that chapter about my mother, the more I wrote, the more and suddenly when I finished the last piece of that, I thought, well, that's me. I just described myself almost. And I didn't think about that before because I've always kind of thought of myself like my dad. I always thought I had his work ethic and his disposition, more of his personality and attitude about things. But when I described my mother, I thought, well, I'm exactly like her as far as the creative aspect of myself.
When did you first kind of realize that you were drawn to music and to writing?
Ralph, I don't know that I ever didn't realize that. We were always making up songs. As little kids, we would sit outside and just make up songs. I just thought that was the natural way to do things. We always were that way. And I find it to be the case with our grandchildren. I don't have grandchildren, but my sister Frida has a granddaughter. So that's my great niece. And we were laughing about it the other day. She was telling us that Abby has started writing songs, and she's four. And the other day she said, well, I need to sing. And so my sister said, well, go ahead. And she said, well, Mama, give me the beat. So in other words, count off the song for me so I know, you know, how fast I need to sing this. So I think it's just a natural thing that, you know, you're born with or not.
You had a number of siblings. Was it a family of 12 children? Is that right? Did I remember
that? Yes, there was 12 of us.
And was music something that you all did as a family gathering to play and sing? Was that part of the Parton lifestyle or the family
Absolutely.
Lifestyle?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We were not real athletic, and we were not sports-minded people. But we loved to sit around and play music and tell stories and, swap, song ideas and to harmonize. It was just one of the best things we could do.
Mm. Well, we're thankful.
I just thought everybody was that way.
Well, we're thankful you all were, I tell you. I was amazed even yesterday. You were harmonizing with the hum of the sound system in the theater. I thought that was really cool. So.
Well, it's just, you just do what you do. We used to do that even with the birds. We would find harmony parts and sing along with the birds.
One thing that really struck me yesterday in your question and answer session, you certainly said many things which were really intriguing, but there was one phrase that you used that really struck a chord with me. It was your comment that in America we enjoy the freedom of spirit. And and I love that language because, as you know, I'm an attorney, and I know your son is also an attorney. And so often when we think of constitutional freedom in America, you know, we're thinking more in lines of freedom of speech, assembly, travel, etc. And when you use that term and connected that with the American life that we enjoy, it really rung true with me. And could you talk a little bit more about what you meant by that?
I think everything that you just mentioned, that we do have the freedom of religion, we have the freedom of speech, we have freedom that we can get up and go wherever we want to go with whomever we want to go with. We can eat whatever foods we want. We can live in whatever color house we want to live in, or how big a house or how small a house, drive whatever car we want to drive. And I think the freedom of expression, to me, is probably what I mean by painting ourselves as the freedom of spirit. Our spirit has not been restricted or constricted by a society that has held us back. Because of having such freedoms, we, as I said yesterday, we walk with a different cadence than I see in other countries that I've had the privilege to visit. We have different mannerisms, and we walk in a looser, you know, more free, relaxed way, I believe, than people I've observed in other countries. Our speech is more of a free, relaxed way of speaking. I don't care if you were born in Massachusetts or in Mississippi. There's just something about the American, you know, rhythm and cadence that I don't believe you find anywhere else.
Well, I think you expressed that so beautifully in the freedom of spirit, and I'm going to use that term and give you credit for it, because it was a beautiful way to express that, a great term of art. Enjoyed
well,
that.
I'm glad then, because I think that the saddest thing to have taken from us is our freedom of spirit. And children have that taken from them when they're scolded as children or when they're abused as children. Women have that taken from them when they are abused as wives. People have that taken from them and robbed from them as a people. When they are enslaved by a society. I believe the Native Americans have had their freedom of spirit robbed from them by our own government at a time when, you know, I think those mm-hmm. are crimes against nature, actually. Mm.
Well, what I love about you, Stella, you tell it, sister, and that's the great thing about your book. You come out there and say it in a very respectful way, and I do appreciate that about you.
Well, I don't say it as a religious person, because I don't consider myself to be a religious person. I do claim to be a Christian. I am a Christian. I believe in the Trinity. I believe that Jesus Christ was our Lord and Savior, and that He was crucified for us, and that He did was risen again on the third day so that we could have salvation. So I do believe that philosophy. But other than that, I do not get into religious discussions with people. I feel like every man should, as the Scripture says, seek out his own salvation with fear and trembling, which means with respect and dignity for yourself and others, I believe. And I don't get into political rhetoric, because I believe that that's what America is about, is having that freedom of spirit to draw your own conclusions and not to be, you know, carried away with propaganda. And I think that as long as I am a patriot, I have a right to speak my piece.
Stella, one theme that comes through in your book, and there are many that I want to touch base on, but one particular that strikes me is perseverance, because in your book, although many of us have the impression that being a star is full of glittering gold, we don't really realize how hard you have to work to make certain goals happen in your career. And in your book, you certainly share that. Could you kind of talk a little bit about your career and moving up the ladder, so to speak, and your ability to persevere through hard times and through struggles?
Ralph, I chose to be an artist because I chose to live a creative life. I never analyzed and was not, I was too naive to know that it was probably a very insecure life on most levels. We don't have a 401k built in. We don't have this. We don't have that. But as I've gone through life, I realize that even though I have flown without a net, so to speak, living a creative life, I've always been able to keep a childlike spirit, because I get just as excited about the next project as I was about the last one. So therefore, nothing is ever drudgery for me, even though I may struggle financially at times. I believe if you always keep the philosophy, which is don't let your mouth, as my daddy would say, don't let your mouth write checks your butt can't cash. In other words, don't make claims you can't live up to. And I think that's something that even attorneys like yourself need to remember.
Amen. Tell it, sister.
Just, you know, well, I'm just serious about it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think that through all my struggles, I always saw that there was another carrot out there. Because I might wake up after a devastating loss in some way and get a new idea for a song from it, and that would just keep me inspired. And that's the way it's been for me.
Let's talk a little bit about, along those same lines, about inspiration. Where do you go to find inspiration?
I do. Let me put an addendum on what I just was talking about.
Sure.
Because I chose to live this creative life, I did not start out in this industry to become a star or to become rich and famous. And I find that to be the case with young people today. They've seen so much TV and so much opulence and money in the entertainment industry,
sure,
be it actors in Hollywood or people actually with no talent but a good press, you know, publicity firm representing them, but they have absolutely no talent whatsoever. They're not adding anything creatively to the world. They just show up for parties in fancy clothes and, you know, act all, you know, sexy and stuff. And it seems that all you have to have today is to be involved in the scandal to become, you know, an overnight sensation, which I find very tragic about our society today and the values that we, you know, are adhering to.
Yeah,
I don't say that to be ugly or anything or to criticize the younger generation, but I do consulting, entertainment consulting, and artist development with young artists, and I make them write a paper every quarter of the year that I work with them, just like if they were going to college.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I have had one artist in particular, and he's quite talented, but he has a lot of work to do, and he needs to work really hard to, you know, clean up his pitch, to clean up his phraseology and his songs and his intonation and just things of that sort, and not party so much so that he can keep his voice healthy. And he started one of his term papers by saying his goals were to be rich and famous.
Mm.
And that really disheartened me, and I scolded him for that. I said, that is not why you should be going about this, just to be rich and famous. If that's what you're doing it for, then I feel bad for you.
Yeah.
That's not going to help you. So anyway, I wanted to finish that out by saying I didn't start out that way. Whatever success I've had, it's been a blessing, but it's also, you know, been hard fought and hard won.
Yeah, and for the listening audience, you've done about everything there is to do in the entertainment industry, from being a singer-songwriter to being a performer in musicals to writing your
producer.
Own book, producer, and out of all those hats that you've worn, which hat have you enjoyed the most?
I think being a live performer, being out on stage in front of an audience, and to have that instant feedback, to look in the faces of people and know that you can make them laugh and make them cry, and, you know, get an applause because you've thoroughly entertained them. To have that kind of power for a few minutes is very sobering, but it's an awesome feeling to say, I usually, of course, go back to the scripture, many are called and few are chosen.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, if you are chosen, then you have to guard that with, you know, respectful hands and take care of that responsibility as carefully as possible.
You know, you mentioned something yesterday that I thought was a wonderful point, that I guess when you were getting started and starting to play and in bars and so forth, that's not necessarily a glamorous tract, but you took the advantage of that time to develop your skills. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, yes, Ralph, I was talking about that because so many times young artists or young aspiring artists will come up and say, well, how did you get started? Do you have any advice? What would you do if you were me? And I always tell them, any opportunity you have to sing, be heard, be seen, and to make connections, do it. Don't wait for the perfect opportunity or the, you know, the biggest crowd or the most wonderful venue or the best band that you can find or sound or whatever. Get up there and work, because you're going to learn something when you get on stage every time you get on stage in front of an audience. No matter how serious the circumstances are or how dire they may be or awkward they may be, save yourself. You're flying without a net. It's like being a trapeze artist and you're flying without a net. If you don't continue to take care, I continue even now to take everything as a practice, regardless, because I'm going to learn something every time I go out there. I fell on stage about July 4th weekend on my second song. Just fell. I got my heel of my shoe hooked in a cord on the stage and fell right in front of the audience. Now, how do you jump up in front of an audience with a skinned knee and still keep your dignity and keep the show going and not freak out the audience? Those are things you better know how to do.
Well, and I know you've flown without a net during your career, but Al Swanee, I think you've also flown with angel wings, Stella, from what I've read and gotten to know about you in your book.
Well, I don't believe there are any accidents. I believe that we all have a purpose here. And when it's fulfilled, we will, you know, fly away. And until, you know, that some glad morning when this life is o'er, I'll just try to fly as close to the ground as I can and be as much of a blessing as I can.
Troubles are washed away. Yes, my troubles are washed away when I draw from the well. I draw from the well. The well belongs to us all. From on high, the supply is never ending. Oh, it never runs dry. It's there for all us children, this endless supply. I trust in the power with all. Yes, my troubles are washed away when I draw from the well. I draw from the well. Oh, I find peace and comfort when I feel lost and unloved. My cup is overflowing with His precious love. It's there for us all if we heed the call. I draw from the well. I just draw from the well of God's living water. I draw from the well. Oh, my troubles are washed away. Yes, my troubles are washed away when I draw from the well. I draw from the well. Yes, I draw from the well.
Hi, my name is Bobby Killer Canup, and you're listening to the Chattahoochee Folk Hour with my friend Ralph Taylor on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brenau University.
And now we're going to go on to part two of my interview with Stella Parton. I hope you're enjoying it. Well, Stella, I noted in your book it's very clear that you are very compassionate and passionate toward others, and in my notes as I was reading your book, there are three incidents that you shared in there. One being your friend Diane, who was in an iron lung for most of her life. Is that right?
Well, all of her life, I think. Well, from the age of three until she passed away in her 50s, yes.
You also mentioned about a performance where a gentleman collapsed, and while waiting on the ambulance to arrive, that you actually stopped the show and gave him comfort and care with your words, and then your friend Maggie that you describe about someone that you initially had sort of a combative moment with that led to a beautiful friendship. Would you say that compassion and passion for others has been a real theme of your life?
Oh, yeah. I think you have to love because, you know, the great, you know, faith, hope, and charity. But the greatest of these is, you know, is love. And you've got to know how to forgive and move forward because in doing that, you're actually forgiving yourself and freeing yourself, freeing your spirit so you can go back to having that freedom of spirit. Because if you drag the ball and chain of bitterness along with you, you really use all your energy, your emotional energy, to drag that bitterness along, and you don't free your spirit so that you can be creative. So I much rather love and be on that level than to, you know, look for, you know, not. Don't get me wrong. I see things and I make critical remarks and have an opinion about most everything. But still, I try to look at it through a sense of humor and love on, you know, whatever level I'm able to.
You mentioned that that you inspire others to find their own truth and to embrace their own individuality. What is Stella Parton's own truth?
My truth is to be as true to myself as I know how to be as grateful for the blessings I've been given as I can be, to be thankful for my family and friends, and to be a patriot to this country, and to be, you know, a citizen of the world, because we're all human beings. All of us, we laugh and we cry, and we love and we, you know, we hate. And how do we find a balance within that? And if to me, it's pretty simple, and I'm a pretty simple-minded person. And I think most of us, really, if you get right down to it, joy is what we're all looking for. Peace is what we're after. And if we can really go through the pain and the struggle of what humanity has, you know, brought to us through ego, we can pretty much feel a life of fulfillment. And it doesn't. Success doesn't come from fame, fortune, or any of that. It comes from loving and feeling loved, and you know, knowing that your journey has been worthwhile, and having as few regrets as possible.
Stella, you tour around the country and certainly the world, and as you know, we've been in this recession for several years, and I know that. That they say, whoever they are, that we're out of the recession. Now they're saying that there may be a double-dip recession. What have you detected, or what kind of vibe do you feel from the country, from people, as you move around in your circles? What's your feeling of where we are in America?
Well, the first thing I would like is I wish the politicians would stop blaming each other and stop blaming the other side. They're all responsible. But it's also, I believe, a cyclical thing. If you go back through history and if you've done much reading, you'll find that it always runs in cycles just like everything. I think that it's necessary to right itself, just like Mother Nature. we need to write ourselves at times. I think sometimes if we have too much opulence, that we start to feel that, it belongs to us, when in fact nothing belongs to us. I find that there's a lot of anger in the world, a lot of frustrations with people in the traffic and in stores or, restaurants, wherever. There's lots and lots of anger. We all have it to deal with because that's stress. But if you really get right down to it, it's because of fear. It's a fear-based emotion instead of a faith-based emotion.
Mm.
And I think that right now, if people would could really look at it, all of us, I'm talking about myself here, and look at the transitional period that we're in and be hopeful about the changes that could happen within ourselves, our families, and our communities, and find better ways of doing things and less wasteful things. I've seen this country be so wasteful, and other countries, other empires have fallen throughout history. You're an attorney, so you're very well read. You have to be to have your education,
mm-hmm.
as my son does. But all big, empires, the Romans and all these people, it's been excess that has brought those empires down throughout history.
Mm.
And I think we're responsible for our own situation. It's greed. I think it's sad to see the poor and the needy suffering because of the greed of those in power. But it is what it is. Now, how do we find our place within that and find some peace with that? I think the only way to do that is to have some hope, to have faith.
Stella, you spoke about fear, and you have some very, very good words about fear in your book. Tell us a little bit about that, about how you've used fear to overcome it and use fear to really be a positive force in your life.
Well, I think that fear can be a paralyzing emotion. If we allow ourselves to become paralyzed and not move forward, then we have lost the battle. We have to make it a stimulant for us in a positive way instead of a paralyzing emotion. That's why in that chapter that I talk about, I call that chapter "Let Fear Be Your Friend."
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot be paralyzed by that emotion.
Yeah, you wrote in that chapter, "Fear has been my constant companion, but it's pushed me forward." This is where mm-hmm. faith comes in and how we can turn fear into faith, just like flipping a coin.
Well, it's all in our attitude. We can either say, I'm going to stare this in the face. That's just like death or, a catastrophic illness that we've been diagnosed with. How are we going to face that? Are we going to face that with fear and become paralyzed, or are we going to say, okay, here's where I find myself. Now, what can I learn about me during this experience to make me a better person, make me the person that I was created to be? And what I find really odd is in America, everybody wants a quick fix. It's a fast food mentality in this country.
Mm.
And somehow our country believes, because we have grown up with this mindset or this consciousness, to think that we're the greatest country in the world and that we're above reproach or that we're somehow entitled, when in fact that's just like healing or miracles or, the doctor can fix this, or, even like I get a wrinkle, I can go have that, injected, get rid of my wrinkles. If I get fat, I can go get bariatric surgery and get that taken care of instead of stop eating, So I honestly believe that for me, I've come to the conclusion after delivering several eulogies over loved ones throughout the last several years, that our greatest triumph is in death.
Mm.
That is where we find our greatest miracle and our greatest healing. And how do we, face that? If we know we're dying, how do we face that as noble and as peaceful as we can? Most people that are dealing with that are dealing with a lot of pain, but hopefully not too much regret about the life they've lived up to that point.
Mm.
But I honestly believe that's the greatest miracle, is our passing.
Stella, you clearly believe in miracles, and that's part of the tagline for your book is about miracles that have been throughout your life. And tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I think that life in itself, birth is a miracle. Just to have a consciousness of life is miraculous in itself. To sit here and talk to you and look out the window and see the sunshine and the breeze and see the squirrels climbing up a tree, that's pretty miraculous in itself.
Yeah.
To be able to have ears to hear with and eyes to see and hands to, you know, embrace a loved one, those are miraculous thoughts. They're not, just incidental things. That's miraculous. And to hear great symphonies and to see great films and to see people write great novels, but to see a baby born or to see a litter of kittens come into, you know, being, those are great miracles. But to see people change their attitude about an illness so that their body can respond to the miraculousness of their own body healing itself because they've changed their attitude toward themselves.
Mm. Mm.
And every bit of that goes back to love.
Yeah. Stella, I want to switch gears here for a minute. There's something I wanted to ask you. What was it like the first time that you played at Ryman Auditorium?
Well, it was overwhelming, and I was very humbled by it, very humbled by it. But I never really have ever thought, no matter how incredible something is to me, that it wasn't supposed to happen.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I've never been so overwhelmed with it to think, oh, I can't believe I'm here. I'm just torn all to pieces. If I'm there, then I walk right into it, whatever it is, because I feel like there are no accidents. God preordained it.
Mm.
So I'm just humbled by it and thankful. But I just go right to it, you know, I just walk into it.
Are there any particular performances you remember that were just at the end of the performance or the experience you just said, wow, this is absolutely incredible?
One comes to mind that is really unusual. I was asked to fill in for Tammy Wynette. She was ill at one point. And I was working in a fair in South Bend, Indiana, and they called and said, Stella, would you be able to get to St. John's, New Brunswick to fill in for Tammy on a Sunday? So we jumped in the bus after the show and drove from South Bend, Indiana, all the way to St. John's, New Brunswick. And it was a big fair up there, and they were expecting Tammy. And it was just me and a pickup band that I had never seen before. And they had driven all night from some club to get there to back me up on the show. There was 10,000 people in this arena. And me standing there in the middle of the stage like an ant on an anthill. And four little musicians that were exhausted and did not know one note of my music, but they were being paid, so they were going to, you know, hack their way through it, they thought. And I decided after we hacked through the first song that there was no way I could let 10,000 people sit out there and listen to the train wreck that was going on. So I said, folks, I said, I'm going to have to send the band off stage. They drove all night and did not have a chance to rehearse my show, as you can tell. So, boys, you're fired. Get off the stage. So I sent them off the stage with a chuckle and sat down in a aluminum folding chair with an autoharp in my lap and did 45 minutes of songs and stories. And I was scared to death because I really can't play the autoharp that well, but I can strum chords and I can tell stories. And so I sang Appalachian music sitting there with this on my lap, and I got up to leave, and they stood up and started applauding, and I walked off the stage. I thought, Lord, they're just doing that because they're so sorry for me. But it was like so quiet you couldn't hear a pin drop. And I walked backstage, and it was very dark back there in this arena, and they started to stomp their feet and want me to come back out, and I'm standing now back there, totally alone, just me and the Lord.
Mm.
And I start to cry because I'm thinking, I could do that with just me and the Lord, and they could appreciate, that many people could appreciate my sincerity and my effort. So, of course, I went back out, and I didn't pick up the auto harp. It was in the chair. I sang Amazing Grace a cappella, and they all helped me. I think that was probably one of the most special moments of my career.
Oh, my. That, I get chills just hearing that story, and thank you for sharing that. That's absolutely beautiful. That's powerful.
Well, I don't know that I sounded that good, but they must have thought it was okay. I think it's about the heart, you know, and about the sincerity in which you love people that really resonates with an audience.
Mm.
Well, everyone knew the circumstances I was under, and they knew that I was there on behalf of Tammy, that she couldn't come because of illness, and then that I made that effort and got there and then was able to at least do that. They saw the effort and the sincerity in it.
Mm. Well, Stella, I know that you gave some great advice yesterday to the students that were in attendance at your class, but the whole campus couldn't be there. And could you take just a few minutes to maybe give some of your words of wisdom to young folks who may want to get into the career? We've touched base a little bit about it, but you talk so much about individuality and being comfortable in your own skin. So could you maybe take a few minutes and just speak to those students for us?
Well, I think the most important thing, Ralph, is as if the students that may be listening, is to listen really to your own heart, to your own conscience, and don't let someone else cut your conscience to fit their idea of who you should be. You know what you are about. You know what feels right to you, and don't follow anyone else's unproven dream. That is called blind ambition, and no one ever wins when, in the long run, there's many millionaires that never win as successful human beings because they've allowed, they've sold out to someone else's unproven dream. Don't allow that to happen.
Did you have expectations for your career, Stella?
Actually, I think I'm living my dream right now. More and more as I go, as the older I get, the more I feel like I'm living my original dream, which was to be a messenger of hope.
Well, you've given hope to so many folks in your career, as you've talked about in your book. One thing we haven't touched based on is your cookbook. You've got a cookbook that you've published as well.
Tell Actually, us about I have three cookbooks.
Well, what's your favorite recipe?
Comfort food. Any kind of comfort food is my favorite thing. And I believe food is very therapeutic. I think it's one of the things, for me, it's very therapeutic for me to cook. I can work out ideas and problems and work off stress by cooking. And it's also another way to just love people. It's everybody eats. And if you're a good cook, people love to, you know, sit down to your table because they know that you want to bring them nourishment, emotional nourishment, as well as, you know, physical nourishment. And what better thing to do than to be able to cook for somebody? I love the fact that I'm a great cook and that it gives me such great pleasure to cook for people. I love that. It's one of my very favorite things to do.
Now, Stella, there's been a real debate going on about folks that are putting sugar in cornbread. What's your opinion about that?
Oh, I think if you're going to put sugar in cornbread, you might as well just put strawberries and whipped cream on top of it.
Oh, me. Well, I tell you, I grew up on homemade biscuits every night from my mother, and so Southern cooking is true and dear to my heart, for sure.
Well, good, because that's the best kind. But I think the sugar in cornbread is fine, but I don't want to eat that with my vegetable soup, you know. It's more like cake. My mother would say, that's not cornbread, that's cake.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what's next for Stella?
Well, I'm going to have a new cookbook out next year. We're working on that now. It's finished, actually. We're just putting the finishing touches on it. I'm working on a couple of album projects. And I should have, there's a film coming out hopefully next month called Green Corn, where I have a small acting part in that. And I'm hoping at some point to have my own radio talk show called Tell It, Sister Tell It.
Oh, gosh, that's fantastic. I think you would be a delight as a radio show host, for sure. For sure, and I do appreciate you taking the time to visit with us here on the Chattahoochee Folk Hour. And I did want to also give my share some thanks for Danielle DeFiti here at Brenau for putting this together for us. That was a very special thing that she did, and I appreciate that very much.
Well, I'd like to thank the girls for that as well. We had a wonderful dinner last night. The ladies over at the mansion next door to the auditorium where I work, and they are just delightful and very intelligent young women and hardworking, and I gained a lot of respect from for them yesterday. And thank you, Ralph, for all your efforts and for taking the time to talk with me today.
Oh, my pleasure, Stella. God bless you here. Thank you.
God bless you. Bye.
Okay. Bye now. Stella Parton gives us such great words of wisdom, and I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed speaking with her. We're going to go ahead and play another cut from her album called The Truth of the Matter to close out the hour, and I sure hope that you have a great week ahead. And remember, every life is a song, every life is a song worth singing. I'll see you next week on the Chattahoochee Folk Hour.
We used to sit and talk for hours, laugh and tell stories into the morning. We had dreams and plans, and they were ours. No one else knew the things we shared between us. But the truth of the matter is, life is a game. Some like the playing and some place to play. We take things as they come. We don't hurt anyone. But the truth of the matter is, some are better than some. Well, the truth of the matter is, life is a game. Some like the playing and some place to play. Some play by the rules, others play the fool. But the truth of the matter, said, life is a game. If you take yourself so serious, girl, it will drive you insane. Well, the truth of the matter is, life is a game. Some like the playing and some place to play. Some play by the rules, others play the fool. But the truth of the matter, the matter is, life is a game. It's all a game. Don't take it so serious. It's just a game. It's a gift. That's what life is. Have a good time.